You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarland. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net. Hey, welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bowes. With me,
Trish McFarland.
What is up, Trish?
Nothing. We're here in lovely Orlando, Florida at the Hyatt Grand Cypress, right? At the Global Force Work Human Conference. It's their first annual and off to a good start, I would say. What do you think?
It's fantastic. This is quick. Let's do quickly. We get this out of the way. Trish, this is HR Happy Hour 215. Working human, work human. We got to think of a title for the show before it posts, or the Rob Lowe Operation Rob Lowe.
Operation Rob Lowe is the title of the show.
Let's call it
Operation Rob Lowe. We can get to that in a little bit. He's my new hero.
So your new hero?
He's my new hero for sure. So
I wanted to get to the mic and ask him which of the DirecTV Rob Lowe's was the best. Like I've written about on the blog.
Right.
I didn't get a chance to ask him that question. But yeah, great event so far. This is recording this on a Wednesday. It's June 10th. I'll get this posted in the next couple of days or so. Lovely Orlando, Florida. Beautiful day. Beautiful event. I've had a really good time here.
Me too. And I love that we're recording the show. We're out sitting by the lake. We've got toes in the sand. I mean, this is the way to work, right?
Yeah.
Work human, and this is what we're doing. We're showing how to get it done.
Yeah.
Living the dream.
Yeah, so this has been a pretty interesting event, different kind of a conference, I would say, as well. And I think that's by design. They have a different take on things here, I think. And what they're trying to do is talk much more about the softer side, if that's fair to say, the softer side of work and workplaces and relationships. It's interesting conversations, I think, but different as well.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously technology is a big part of what Global Force does, but yeah, they're definitely focusing in on some of the aspects that keep you satisfied in a role or make you take a role at a company, the things that go beyond just the technology, things that go beyond just the job description, and it's really more about, you know, we talked a lot about culture in some of these sessions, and I think too, just in approaching work differently, and they've set the sessions up that way, so it's not your traditional, you know, sort of a conference where you go into a session and just sit and have someone talk at you for an hour. It's been very interactive and collaborative, and I think that that's what they're also trying to convey that the workplace needs more of. So it's been very, very interesting.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's two kind of, if I had to say, right, just from going to events and reading things and working on, you know, different things we work on, or just from my perspective, you know, I don't know if you agree with me, Trish, or not. I think there's kind of two big sort of things happening, right, in HR, HCM. There's two sort of, and I think they're kind of different. So one is sort of quantified or quantitative HR. Data-driven decisions, scientifically validated assessments in order to make, say, hiring decisions or to validate decisions around what roles might work best for someone. Macro data kinds of analyses, some of the things that Ultimate does or ADP does and Cornerstone is doing, right, with sort of aggregated data across their platforms of customers in order to help individual HR leaders and organizations make better decisions. So just basically everything data, everything quantified, everything sort of in that domain. And then I think there's sort of another thing happening, right, which is what's happening here, right? Retention, engagement, recognition, all those things that culture, the emphasis on culture as a strategic operational advantage. And often I don't think those two things sort of cross. Maybe they don't cross at all. They don't seem to be crossing here too much, and I'm not saying they should. But I think that's kind of the two conversations that are happening now. And I think they're different conversations. I'm not sure if I'm right about that, or it's just what I think, or they should be the same conversation, or can they be? But that's what I think. That in particular is what I find fascinating about this event, because it's different than any of the other events I've been to this year and the things I've been thinking about and reading and talking about, which is more on the form and more on the data side of HR. I don't know what you think about that. about that. Am I wrong on that?
No, I agree. I mean, I think, you know, we talked a tiny bit about this yesterday when we had a conversation with Lance Hahn from Star Conspiracy, and I think that there are definitely two camps right now. I don't think it's mutually exclusive, but people do tend to gravitate from a comfort level into one or the other, maybe. So having been on the practitioner side for a long, long time, I think that when I think of maybe myself and my colleagues over the years who are practitioners, maybe it's a little more comfortable to deal with things like employee engagement. And, you know, there's data attached to that, right? There's surveys and, you know, communication plans and things that have to be written strategically around more the softer side of HR. But, you know, a lot of HR professionals feel really comfortable in that zone. And
So
the challenge has been that it's not as easily measured. Although measurement did come up in two of the sessions yesterday briefly, but it did come up as something that's important to measure. But it is harder to measure some of these softer softer reasons to stay somewhere, softer reasons of how to interact with people mm-hmm. better and be kinder and that sort of thing and helpful. But, you know, I think that a lot of what we do and a lot of what we attend, and especially around HR technology, specifically is geared more toward measurement and data, and that's where HR pros feel a little less adept.
Right,
so I'm not saying they can't do it, and many are doing it. That's definitely a shift. But when I think about teams I've coached and led, that's maybe where the comfort is not at all. And so, I don't know. I think there's room for both, and it'll be interesting over the years, in the next couple of years, if we start to see that come together a little bit
right.
more. But you're right. Right now, it is still pretty separate, I think.
Yeah, and I think what I find fascinating about it is, like, both sort of approaches to HCM or supported by HR tech, but both different approaches are both sort of have their own challenges, and neither one specifically is a direct path to sort of, you know, relevance and strategic value add, right? Because on the softer stuff is just so hard to quantify, it's so hard mm-hmm. to assess, it's so hard to measure. And it's difficult to sell, right, as we've known for a long time.
Right, your CEO doesn't really want you to come in, or your CFO definitely doesn't want you to walk in and be talking about getting employees engaged, right? They still don't, I mean, they've been around forever, they don't like that conversation. It's like, get out of here.
And the quantitative HR side is difficult to sort of master, as you said, right?
Very much so.
Maybe in many organizations you haven't come up through the ranks or have that background or that mm-hmm. comfort or familiarity with those approaches, those techniques, and you may not have access to the technologies yet. Lots of HR technology vendors are doing really amazing things, but it's sort of early days for all of them.
I feel like you're right on that. That's right on the money.
And maybe we don't have access to them all yet anyway in many organizations. So anyway, I think that's fascinating. And then I guess the other thing that I thought about yesterday, and a little bit today, but mostly yesterday here at the Work Human Conference down in Orlando, is like these guys almost are trying to say to some extent, well, We've all bought into engagement is good. Engagement equals good. Engagement should be a priority, a strategic priority for organizations because of all the great things that it can enrive. So let's stop talking about engagement, which you and I did a show at the end of last year about the final conversation on employee engagement. But my approach at that show, anyway, or my position on that was we got to be done talking about it because we need to talk about more of the data, more of the science. That's where I was going.
And my answer was no. It's absolutely not dead.
And these guys want us to stop talking about employee engagement too, because they want to talk about happiness. Or at least they wanted to start talking about happiness.
Yeah.
And I just, whatever. I'm a cynic, and I'm like, you know, maybe I didn't come through HR, right? I didn't spend a career in HR.
Right.
And that doesn't mean you'd have to have a career in HR to believe that this, but I'm like, whoa, happiness, huh? I mean, to me, that's even more fuzzy, even more difficult to get your handle on, even a little bit more removed from work in many circumstances. Like your happiness and how your happiness might equate to work performance or your satisfaction with work may not have anything to do with work. It may have to do with your crazy cousin who won't get a job and get off your couch, or your kid who, you know, can't get it straightened out in school, or you know, the myriads and millions of things that can happen, right, that have nothing to do with work, that of course impact your happiness. Maybe you're having some medical problems or something like that. There's thousands of things, and I think HR leaders for sure, and organizations more in general, need to be really careful about trying to go there. in terms of employee happiness, I don't think they're trying to go there.
I think Eric Mosley's point was more around, you know, there are things you can do from a work perspective to help make people happier, both in their work, in the day-to-day work, because that does happen where you go in and you, if you're not appreciated, you know, one of the things we heard just today was that, you know, you go into work and how many times, Derek Irvine was saying this, you know, you go in and no one knows what you do. No one thanks you. It's that you're not even being talked to.
Mm-hmm.
You're just ignoring the people around you. You're ignoring your colleagues, or you're being ignored, or your boss is ignoring what your contributions are. So, yeah, can you have more happiness at work? Absolutely. I don't think it's unattainable. I think it's actually really, really easy, probably, if people are just a little more mindful. One of the things, too, I just want to point out, and we can post the link to this. We actually did a show with the CEO from Globalforce, I think it was last August, and it was right after his book came out, and he talked about, on the show, all of his thoughts and Globalforce's sort of approach to sort of this, you know, engagement and happiness and gratitude and recognition at work. So we can post the link to that so that you can actually hear hear Eric's perspective on that. But one of the things I made a note yesterday that he said, happier workers work harder. And so when you think about, yeah, you might be having medical problems, say, but if you know you're at a company that's actually giving you really good medical benefits, or maybe, you know, I'll give one recently, you know, I had a grandparent pass away. Well, I really was in a situation where I didn't have good bereavement leave.
Right.
This was a person that was a major, major, major part of my life. So big. One day is not enough. Okay. One day off is not enough for someone to grieve. Now, I'm not saying I needed a week, or I'm just saying having flexibility when you're in a situation, for example, where you're dealing with something outside of work that has really impacted you as a human being, and not, you know, having a boss come to you and say, you know what, take the time you need. I have worked in a workplace like that, too, where we used to tell people that. You take the time you need. And if that means that, you know, 2 weeks later you're sitting at your desk and you feel like you're going to cry, take the rest of the day off.
Yeah.
Go do what you need to do to get yourself into a better mental state. That's what I think Globalforce is kind of trying to promote. It's that kind of happiness at work. It's being kind to people and thanking them and being grateful, and that creates an environment where you want to be there.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that for sure. And in particularly around things like supporting of them. So here's the thing, right? I think you get into trouble, or you can get into trouble in organizationally, when you're trying to sort of more directly think about and or perhaps influence these outside of work things.
Mm-hmm.
But the way you, I think you make a great point about bereavement, the way you help influence them and the way you help support employees in these outside of work things that directly equate to, say, their happiness, their engagement, their productivity,
exactly,
is by creating an environment, a set of procedures, policies, or just kind of a place where those outside of work things can be respected, they can be honored, and they can be appreciated. So bereavement leave is a perfect thing, right? There's a huge difference in how you're going to approach, or at least think about your work in the workplace when you think, boy, these people really don't give a shit about me,
right.
You know, because they're more concerned with, like, how am I counting for my time and did I get that report turned in? Meanwhile, you know, I'm devastatedly upset about what's happened in my personal life, whether
exactly.
it's a death or an illness or other things
and
that can
let
happen.
Let me give an example
that's
of a good one.
That's a great
so
example.
When, and this I always found, I think maybe because this happened early in my career, so shout out to PwC because they had so many innovative sort of approaches to being happy or I liked when you said support. That really resonates with me. When I worked there, and this would have been in the, you know, mid to late 90s into, you know, to almost the end of the 2000s, but there was a woman who always wanted to have a garden. And
okay.
I worked in the tax department. I was HR for the tax department almost my entire tenure there. And this woman, you know, tax time is in the spring. That's when you need to be planning your garden, right?
Right.
This woman just was passionate about wanting a garden.
Was she an HR person too? Or no,
she worked in the tax practice, yes. And we had sort of this new idea at the time. Again, this is late 90s, maybe early 2000s. And it was sort of like to start recognizing what your employees wanted to do outside of work and try and support them in some way. And it wasn't a policy. It was just that we were encouraging the partners and other leaders to be mindful.
Right.
Number one, to ask.
Right, because you were asking.
What's important?
My guess is
people.
You were asking a lot of these people at that
oh
time of
gosh.
Year in terms of their effort,
you know,
their time,
they're working,
and so on. Yeah.
They're working 100 hours a week during spring. Right. It's that's what you do. It's a tax department, and that still has to occur. But what was interesting was that when we found out that she wanted to always have this garden, they worked her schedule out, and her colleagues chipped in to help her, even during their busy
right.
season, so that it was like, you know, for those, I forget what it was exactly, it was something like for 4 weeks, she was able to get off work at 4 o'clock every day so that she could go home, number one, and plant the garden and then tend the garden, whatever. You know, it was like she got off, you know, 4 isn't normally early, but in tax season, that's way early,
sure.
right? Because everybody's working until midnight. And she
That's
would go
like
home.
A fun place.
Right? No, I know. But hey, yeah. they had their many other perks
yeah.
throughout the year. You
right.
get to do all sorts of
yeah.
stuff. But anyway, the point being, she was able to go do that, and they supported her, and then she could get back online at
right.
home later on after it was dark or whatever, and get done whatever, you know. And it wasn't like she felt like it was an added burden, but no, she was able to get her garden going, and it was wonderful. And then we got to hear about the garden. But let me tell you what, do you think someone like that, who feels heard and supported and valued, are they going to stay with your company? Are they going to work harder the next time? Are they going to step up and help a colleague more maybe than someone else?
Certainly, yes, to all those things, right?
Can
that
you
seems
measure
really
that exactly? Maybe
but,
not, but it's you know
yeah,
it's
well,
true.
Well, that's
but
the problem.
You know
hey,
that's true.
Let's take a quick reset, take a breath. It's hot out here. We should have brought some beverages out here. What were you thinking?
It's not really happy hour.
This is HR Happy Hour 215. We're recording live from Orlando, Florida. What's the name of this place? The Grand Cypress?
Hyatt Grand Cypress, which is gorgeous property.
Very
so
nice.
I would
yes.
absolutely come back here. There's a beach. They have a beach.
I like the beach.
A beach, a lake. There's boats.
There's a few boats
kayaks,
out here.
Paddle boats. I'm thinking we should have done this from a boat. This
Tough
maybe
duty.
Next. Okay, next
yeah.
year.
So I'm Steve Bowes. Trish McFarland's here as well. We're
That's
sitting
right.
On some chaise lounges and enjoying the conversation.
Can we talk about the important stuff now, though? Really? This is all fascinating. Let's talk about Rob Lowe.
Yes,
so,
please. Why don't you do a little setup for folks listening to the podcast
okay.
who may not be familiar
so
with the conference.
Today is the last day of the conference, and our keynote today was Rob Lowe. Now, 80s girl, like, I had the Rob Lowe posters in my bedroom. Of course, I've seen, you know, Outsiders and St. Elmo's Fire and, like, everything that the man has ever done, I think. And it even came up today, the Behind the Candelabra. So if you haven't seen that, that's one of his more recent works. Amazing movie.
West Wing. They talked
West
about
Wing,
a lot
West Wing, of course, yes. And he
Parks
has a new... We might as well give the plug to Rob Lowe because he's got the new... it's called The Grinder. Coming out this
yeah,
fall.
The
new
Grinder.
Show.
Okay.
The Grinder, which sounds really good. So, but he, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, it's Rob Lowe, but how good is this keynote going to be? Like, I'm going to enjoy looking at
right.
him, which... oh, my gosh. Okay, I think all of the women, for sure, probably most of the men in the room, I think we were all just floored and amazed. This is... probably the most beautiful human I've ever seen.
I would say that,
in person.
You know, in terms of just like physical, like looking at when you know what you notice
yeah.
about people, there's
yeah.
two types of people that you notice, right? The two types in the world, I believe. But one is like the professional athlete, particularly the basketball player.
Yeah.
Just because typically, right, of the bigger players
sure.
anyway, they're just so enormously big. Even
right.
the ones that appear not so big when you watch them on TV,
yeah. Yeah.
compared to the other guys, they're maybe a medium-sized guy.
Sure.
But if you ever run across one of these fellows in real life,
oh,
all
yes.
you say to yourself is,
oh
my God, this is the biggest person I've ever seen. So it's that type of person, the professional athlete, basketball player. That, and then the second type of person that you just cannot help but just really notice is... male or female, quite frankly, I think, the incredibly good-looking person. Because the incredibly good-looking person is so much better looking than even, like, the pretty nice-looking people of
yeah.
the normal people,
yeah.
right? There's plenty of nice-looking people at this
there
conference.
Are lots of
it's
nice
a very nice conference. But then Rob Lowe comes in and you say, holy crap.
Yeah.
This is the best-looking person I've ever seen in the world.
He is the most beautiful
And he's so much better-looking than everybody
yeah.
else. It's not even close.
You know, and it's not because he's an actor or a celebrity, because I've seen several in person. I actually, you know, a favorite that, of women for sure is George Clooney. And when he was in St. Louis filming Up in the Air, and I'm not knocking George, he's a handsome person, but I actually was in a bar where he was, I was there for a birthday party and he was at the same bar just at the next table. I wouldn't have given him a second glance. He was that average looking, just in normal clothes, you know, no makeup, whatever. If someone hadn't said, wait, why are there bodyguards all over?
Right.
We look and it's like, oh, it's George Clooney, you know. Now that I have seen both George Clooney and Rob Lowe, there is no comparison.
Yeah, well, Rob looked made up. He looked good. He looked sharp. He had the suit on, the hair was cut up.
So here's my stereotype, though. I'm thinking Rob Lowe's not going to be maybe all that interesting. How funny is he really? As you know, not as an actor, not playing a role.
What kind of insights does he have?
What insights?
He's a TV actor.
Yeah, have to tell you, I was so impressed. I made more notes on what he was saying than probably any speaker I've heard in a long time. So I just really liked he was smart, he was funny, he just really brought a lot of work lessons into perspective for me in ways I hadn't really thought of. And so being able to talk about not just being an actor, but being a worker and the future of work and how he approaches work, I thought that was fascinating. What'd you think about that?
Well, a couple things. And this ties, one thing is that ties back to the conversation we were just having about sort of engagement and happiness and things outside of work. One of the things he said, and I didn't write it down, but I'll sort of paraphrase the quote, but it was more or less, and he was sort of alluding to his past, and he had, you know, he sort of cleaned himself up, cleaned up his act, he got sober and stopped partying so much, started a family, got married, and so on and so forth. He said something along the lines of, you can't really sustain enduring professional success if your personal life's a mess.
That's true.
And he didn't feel it was sustainable, because eventually it would fall apart, eventually it would unravel, or eventually it would become, or at a minimum, it would certainly become less. You would achieve less than you probably could have otherwise. And that's not, I don't think he meant this, and I'm not trying to say this. I don't think everybody needs to have a perfect personal life, a perfect happy family, or a perfect, picket fence, 2.5 kids, or as I like to say.
You don't? You don't believe in the dream?
Two wonderful kids and another kid. Like, I think that, because that's just not realistic,
right?
Quite frankly, and it's also, I think it's, in many ways, it's fake, quite frankly, but I do think you can't be a mess. You can't be a wreck. You can't be boozing it up. You can't be, taking drugs. You can't be, dodging, people who are after you for money. Like all the really kind of bad. You can't, when those things are happening in your life and your life's really a mess, you're not going to achieve. You're not going to sustain excellence. And even in the example you gave, Trish, this woman had a perfect. Sounds like she was perfectly well adjusted and perfectly happy, but she was fine. But she really wanted that one thing in her personal life, that one thing to make her happy, just that garden, that one thing. And I'm not saying she couldn't have achieved success at work without that garden, but she probably achieved more when she had that thing in her life that was important to her. So
It's funny you called it that. That was the name of the little program. Like I said, it wasn't a policy. It was called The One Thing.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
And everybody had their one thing that would give you some...
That the rest of the team would support.
That the rest of the team would support. And so, for some people, it was they wanted to train for a marathon. You'd have to make sacrifices as a team to allow that person to have additional time during the day to go do that and make that happen. Yeah. So, but you're right when you talked about things being impossible to hold on to. I think it's even more... It resonated with me more, not even like, oh, you have to give up drinking or smoking or doing drugs. It's not even those extreme things sometimes. It's, I liked how he was sort of saying it's like making those incremental, intentional changes to your personal life just to try and make it better.
Yeah.
I thought to me that was like, I could do that. I could probably think of, a handful of things right now, small things that if I did in my personal life, it would make things a little smoother at home or smoother at work or whatever. So I thought that was an interesting lesson. The other one that that he hit on and he talked about, kind of circled back to a couple times, was at one point he said casting is everything,
mm-hmm.
and that 90% of a movie's success is in the casting, and that you have to really choose your peer group wisely. And so I think that to me is also the same, and that's whether it's work or your friends, personally or whatever, who you surround yourself with is vitally important. And I think that sometimes in work, we get, it's not even organizationally as a whole. Sometimes it's your work team. If that's not a solid place that you want to be, that's supportive, mm-hmm. and whatever, you're not going to be happy. You're not going to find success there. If you're isolating yourself at work, if you're isolating yourself at home, you're also not going to be successful. You don't have that that cast of support that you need. So, I thought that was an interesting way to think of it. I've never really thought about we talk a lot about hiring, but I haven't thought of it as like casting.
Yeah.
Casting, to me, I will tell you what, the difference is, maybe in those words, this is just my mind, casting sounds more intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You are casting people into a role. Maybe we need to think about how we fill our jobs as more as casting the perfect role at that time.
Right.
Of what's needed. And that casting could change.
And a larger part of casting too, from what I understand about it, is particularly, you know, for say the lead roles and things like that, when they do this, is they're also measuring not just the individual performer, him or herself, but they're measuring them alongside the other people they're considering or maybe have already hired for the role. So basically the people that they have to work with every day, the people that they're going to have to do the scenes with, the people that are going to have to create the art. Because often, it's two people in a scene or three people or whatever it is, right?
And
to sustain that long term.
So like the ensemble becomes more important maybe than we think of it in work?
Possibly. I thought it was interesting. It sort of makes me think when you mentioned this, casting is 90% of the success of a movie. I think you said it was an Alfred Hitchcock quote. Reminds me of something we saw yesterday during the opening keynote when Global Force announced a new partnership with IBM to sort of to better integrate data across the two platforms and make available survey data from Kinexus survey, kind of customers use those things for surveys, and the Global Force recognition data. So I guess that was the one time I heard them talk about data in the last day and a half. But the IBM guy, whose name is escaping me now, so I apologize, kind of talked. He almost, I felt like I was sitting there and I started to get like rising in my chair, because I felt like my culture, strategy, talent triangle, my rock, paper, scissors thing that I've written about on the blog and presented about, I thought they were almost taking it from me, because he had like something that kind of looked like a triangle. It wasn't exactly a triangle, but he had three words in that were tri-cornered, if you will.
Exactly.
And he had culture, talent, work. Work was the third corner, not strategy, but I think kind of they're talking about the same thing. And where I was slightly upset that I feel like, hey, man, don't rip off my stuff. Don't rip off my shtick, right? I also think, yeah, that's really cool, because that's what we also need to talk about. And this goes back to what I was saying at the top. Like, let's not forget the other important elements of organizational success. Much like Rob Lowe said, casting is 90% of the success of the movie, right? Yes, you need to have people who get along together well, and the director's got to be the right kind of leader, and you've got to have really good source material, right? A great cast can't really elevate a piece of crap script, right?
Exactly.
And people who get along together really, really well won't elevate the work if they're not good at what they do, right? You've probably had coworkers
if it's any component, it might be that the team, maybe you've got the great cast of characters, and they have the skills and knowledge too, but if you don't have vision from the top, for example, or great leadership, it'll fall apart too. So yeah, if any one component is missing, it could be from the cast, if you will, but it could be from the leaders too.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes both ways.
Yeah. So I appreciated that. Though, yeah, that was my other note I had in my mind about the Rob Lowe speech, was the casting is 90% of the success of a film, and I think that's probably largely true in other circumstances as well. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm the triangle guy, so I probably would say, you know, in organizations, it's probably not 90%. It's probably, I don't know. I wrote the triangle thing. I don't know if it's a third, a third, a third. I don't know if it's all equal. Probably isn't. I'd probably say talent is probably more valuable than the other two components. But, you know, do we need to have a compelling product or service that people actually want and know how to deliver that at a differentiated advantage? Yeah, we kind of do, no matter who's our talent.
Right.
And our talent can help us get there. Our talent can help us figure that out.
Right.
Our talent can help us execute on those operational objectives very well. And it helps them to do that if we have a great culture like you did at PwC, where this woman could go home and plant her garden and feel supported and feel engaged at the team. But without all those things and those colleagues, the rest of that 90% who were there to support her and who knew they would get supported
when they had
their
time,
one big thing,
that's
how it all comes together really well. And I think, last thing I'll say, I'm talking a lot and I apologize, when one thing gets talked about too much at the expense of the other, which is part of my takeaway from this, that's where you're going in the wrong direction.
Well, and I think that's kind of as we kind of come to a close, that's really a good point to end on, because, you know, we attend a lot of events, and we do see a lot where it's focused on just the data and just the technology, and now we're at events where we see it more focused on just the softer side of things. And like I said at the beginning, I think HR leaders probably fall more into one camp than the other. And so maybe that's the message, is if you're an HR leader or any kind of leader, really, is that you do have to really have a more holistic approach to this. And then there are times where culture is going to be more on your mind, and engagement and happiness and that sort of thing, and gratitude. And there are probably times when the data needs to be more on your mind. So how we can get better as leaders at sort of wearing both of those hats and having it be simultaneous, more than it is right now, because it does seem pretty divided at the moment.
I do feel like this has been a successful podcast, Trish, because I feel like we've arrived at the end, and you're basically saying I'm right.
I'm not.
Yeah, I feel like you are.
No,
did I misread that? I'm right.
You're not right. You're not right. We're going to argue till the end of time. Otherwise, this will be our final episode.
I feel like I'm right about this.
I don't think you're right about this. Anyway, for next time, right? For next time. Right. So at any rate.
Next week we'll do the Entourage movie review, too. Go see Entourage next week, would you?
Oh, yes. So,
I'll see it, too,
yes.
And we'll include that. Speaking of show business, we'll do that next week.
We'll do a movie review. That would be good. But we've got Ben doing the book reviews, and so we'll come back with a movie review. Just sort of as a little follow-up to our Oscar preview show, which was oh so successful.
And the NBA playoffs preview show.
Yes, which was good as well. Just to speak of that briefly, so the two teams I bet money on are out.
Yes,
so I have not been a
successful bettor, and the teams I picked on the podcast as well. So I picked Golden State, though.
Yeah.
They're losing 2-1. Oh. Cleveland beat them last night, so the series is still ongoing, but Cleveland won last night, game 3. So.
And you didn't like Cleveland, see? And
I didn't think they'd get past my Atlanta Hawks. So
I think that's crazy.
Messed up on that one. So, all right, good stuff. This is a lot of fun. We'll see us at SHRM. If you're going to be at SHRM Annual Conference in Las Vegas in a couple of weeks, Trish and I are presenting on HR Tech Implementations on Tuesday morning at 7 a.m.
That's right.
At SHRM. I forget the date that is, but it's the Tuesday morning of SHRM.
And I have to tell you, we've got some really exciting data we're going to be sharing in that session, so people need to check that out. Some data from Stacey Harris over at Sierra Cedar. So I'm very, very pleased to kind of bring that out to everyone at SHRM.
Awesome. That'll be fun. So we'll see you in a couple weeks, Trish. And thanks so much, everyone. And thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour show. Subscribe on iTunes, podcast apps, anything you want. Just search for HR Happy Hour. Never miss a show. Trish, great to see you. We'll see you soon. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Global Force and Work Human, and see you next time from the HR Happy Hour show.
Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour show, your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.